Spare the rod, spoil the child. That was the mantra for some parents in generations gone by. And how far we've travelled since those days. Now, participation certificates and good job mates are all the rage. But are we going too far? Can you overpraise your child? And if you do get on board the praise craze, is there a right and wrong way to do it? New research out this week offers some clues on the impact of positive reinforcement on a child's success and confidence. Professor Philip Parker is the Deputy Director at the Institute for Positive Psychology and Education at the Australian Catholic University. Philip's the author of this new study. And Professor Parker, welcome to Life Matters.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Now, as I understand it, Philip, there's a number of studies looking at how to make kids happy and successful. In fact, there's been years of this. What did you set out to discover with your research?
Yeah, look, so we had data from about 2,600 kids. And what we had is in year three, their parents said, you know, we asked the question, is your child better than average, average, below average? We also had their NAPLAN scores.
In regards to what, sorry? When you say better than...
Oh, better than average than their classmates in their academic performance.
Right. So you were measuring on academic performance there, were you?
That's right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And we were able to match that to their NAPLAN scores. And so we were able to sort of distinguish between parents who thought that their kids were better than what their NAPLAN results suggested and parents that thought their children were not quite as good as what their NAPLAN results suggested. And then we tracked those kids over time. And what we found was that in year five, the kids whose parents overestimated their ability, they were optimistic, they did better in subsequent NAPLAN tests. And more importantly, they actually grew in their interest. They were more interested in maths. They were more interested in reading than the parents who were more sort of pessimistic.
So from that, you're extrapolating that the home environment is a positive one. There's optimism, there's hope, there's encouragement.
Yeah, so what we essentially thought was that we're looking at an orientation towards positivity, and there's lots of ways that that might have benefits for the child. So we know, for instance, that parents who are more optimistic, they invest more resources in their child's education. So they might go hire a tutor, they might go, you know, buy one of those computer games for maths blasters, something like that. But also they tend to be more motivating. And they tend to give homework help that is more positive and supportive rather than controlling and detrimental.
And when it comes to your examination of these results, was it confined just to numeracy, or literacy also played a role here as well?
Yeah, we looked at both numeracy and literacy, and the results were the same for both of them.
Okay.
So parents' optimism was great no matter what the school subject was.
And did you also examine the role of mother versus father in that dynamic?
Yeah, look, so the data was from the child's primary caregiver. And unfortunately, in some ways, we still have a long way to go because 96% of the cases were actually from mothers. So we really focused on mothers. We did have a look at the small number of fathers there, and the results were the same. And what we're thinking essentially is that the guardian or parent, whoever it is, as long as they're optimistic, we think it'll be a good thing.
I just want to drill down a bit further on this too, because I'm wondering, how do you know for certain that the effect of these outcomes that you measured between grade 3 and 5 was simply because of praise?
Look, we don't think it's just praise. Praise has a role. And importantly, it's not just any kind of praise. You've got to give particular sorts of praise. Now, I'm sure we'll come to that in a little bit. But it is also just that an orientation towards being positive towards your kids. It changes how you act. So, you know, it's we now know for teachers, for instance, that teachers' expectations kids, the kids will live up to them. And it's the same with parents. So if you expect your kid to do poorly, they end up doing poorly.
So it becomes a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I say, there's lots of ways that can happen. It can happen through, you know, material support like resources, but also motivation.
Now, as I understand it, Philip, I mean, this optimistic approach is related to what the best-known researcher in the field, Carol Dweck, calls the growth mindset. Is that what we're referring to here, a growth mindset?
Yeah, it absolutely is. So the important thing that we know is that kids need lots of things. They need safety, shelter, they need food, they need love, but they also need a certain other things. And those things are they need to feel autonomy, that they have control over their lives. They need to feel a sense of relatedness, that people care for them. And they also need to feel competent. And parents provide a really important role in providing that critical nutrient to children. That they need to feel competent. And in order to feel competent, what they need to have is a sense that they can get better, that they can improve. And that's where the importance of how the praise comes across. It needs to be about how can your child improve? How can you praise the process?
My guest is Professor Philip Parker, Deputy Director of the Institute for Positive Psychology and Education at the Australian Catholic University. We're talking about some of the outcomes of his research into the area of impact of praise and positive benefits when there's affirmation that a child is doing well. Let's find out what that means at a grassroots level, on the ground, so to speak. I'd like to bring in someone into this discussion who knows this full well. Di hails from Western Sydney, and she happens to be a parent of four, a grandparent of eight, between the ages of 19 months and 15 and a half. And Di, hello, congratulations. Welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you. Yeah, life's full of fun.
I can imagine. I was going to say, Di, what is life like at your house every day at the moment?
Oh, chaos. And that's good. No day's the same. And every day is different. And that's probably, you know, one of the benefits, I suppose, of being a multi-generational family. We all live very close to one another. So we all learn from each other.
So do you have a grandchild at least? Sorry to interrupt. I was just saying, do you have a grandchild, at least one, with you every day?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, I have a son who's the primary caregiver, solo dad, and so his two kids are there in the morning and then the afternoon before and after school because I work from home. But all my kids live within a 5-kilometre radius, so all my grandkids are in and out of the place.
You're like the sun and they're the planets. Yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. And before we get to your approach, Di, as a parent and grandparent, tell me the story of when you were walking in the mountains with your 2.5-year-old granddaughter.
Oh, yeah. My husband is a great bushwalker and I'm a, you know, I'll take it or leave it type of person. But my granddaughter is very much, what do you call it, in awe of her grandfather. So she was keeping up with him and I was sort of dawdling behind looking at stuff, and she turned around and said, "Come on, Nanny, you can do it." And when I eventually caught up with them, she said, "Good job, Nan, good job." So I think she's had a great experience in her own home on positive encouragement, positive praise. I felt a little patronised as an old woman, but nevertheless... That's an interesting point, isn't it?
The spirit there. And what does that say, do you think, Di, about that generation now rising, about their approach to their success and the success of those around them?
That it's changed and evolved considerably from when, you know, I was a young parent myself, and that as you grow and learn as a parent, you do change your parenting style with the different information. And I think that's what I see in my kids, a better style of parenting or a more positive style of parenting than what I was taught and possibly what I handed on to them.
Oh, that's interesting. Have you actually had that conversation with your progeny as parents themselves now?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. As recently as yesterday, actually. We sometimes talk over Messenger quite a bit during the day, and we had that conversation of how, the difference in how we and both my husband and I react quite differently too, because we learnt our parenting from two different sets of people, and how that's changed. I actually surprisingly to him, I think, said, "Thanks for teaching me that bit." And we exchange, we're pretty avid readers as far as research goes, but particularly I have a bit of a kink of an interest in neuroscience, and so I'm interested in how what we say and what we do affects how kids feel.
And Di, have you, in obviously doing a bit of reflection on this and also research, have you noticed in yourself that perhaps your parenting style has changed from your sons and daughters to now being a grandparent to granddaughters and grandsons. Has that been a shift in your thinking in the way you deal with young people?
Yeah, well, I suppose one of the advantages of being the grandparent is that you're not the key moulder, but I think research is now telling us that grandparents have a great influence on kids too and on their self-esteem. I was brought up in a family, the old spare the rod, spoil the child. I can remember my mother saying to me, don't let him get away with that because you'll be, he'll be seen as that child and you won't be welcome anywhere, you have to get down hard on that behaviour. And so in the initial stages, you let the baby cry for a long period of time because they don't want anything. Well, we now realise that that's the only communication tool they had at the time. And I think, yes, you change over time. And I watch the relationships between my kids and their kids and see that there's, while we still have very strong relationships with our kids, it's quite different.
So,
if that makes sense.
No, it makes absolute sense. And what about with your husband? Does he have the same sort of level of insights? Or I shouldn't say that. That sounds insulting. But does he at least express them in the same way you do?
He has the same level of insights, and he does know, but he probably finds it a little bit more difficult to express it. So often we will have conversations of an afternoon after a family day. And he'll say, "Gee, grandchild X was impressive today." And I said, "Well, don't tell me, tell them." And that's possibly the one difference we have. It's quite easy. I'm finding it easier. Sorry, I don't say it's quite easy. I'm finding it easier. To say great job and things like that, where he tends to tell me, and then my conversation is, don't tell me, tell them.
Because you also want to break down those old constructs around who gives the praise as well, who gives the positive reinforcement.
I think so, and I think it has a lot to do also with your own upbringing. My parents were firm, but they were always positive. My dad had high expectations and you always wanted to go home with that result or whatever you had to show him that, see, look, good dad, I'm doing well. And he always gave you that praise. I wasn't, present in my husband's upbringing, but I believe it would have been somewhat different, just somewhat different. And I think, and I don't know what the research says, but he was the oldest and I was the youngest, so that also may have had some effect on, I can recall my sister going, I would never have been able to get away with that, saying those sorts of comments to me years down the track.
Those kind of resentments bubble through families forever, I reckon, Di.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I was one of those afterthought kids too, I sort of came a generation after my older siblings. So two of them spoiled me and the other one sort of kept telling me what I got away with and she didn't. So, yeah, difference.
I'm going to come back to you because, Philip Parker, I want to bring you back in on this. Is there any evidence to suggest that overly optimistic parents could reduce their child's drive to work harder and give them some kind of false idea of the opportunities that might be available to them? Is there evidence to support that kind of perception?
Yeah, look, that was the sort of assumption that we had when we went into it. We didn't find a lot of evidence in our research of that. But we do know that it sort of comes down to how your optimism is translated to your kids. So if that optimism comes across as controlling or, in a way that your children sort of feel that your love is contingent on them continuing to perform really well or continuing to improve, then, that can be dangerous and indeed it can stifle kids' aspirations for the future.
Can you give me an example of where you might be stepping outside the bounds of creating good in this way?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we say in, education, for instance, is that what you want to try and do is instill a love of learning in your kids.
Right.
And so when your praise comes across like, you're so smart, smart is something that you can't really change, or at least it's very hard to. But if you come across as, wow, that's so interesting, I'm really interested in what you're learning, isn't that fascinating? Hey, let's figure out how we can find out about this together. Or I really love that you chose to do that. Tell me a little bit about what you were thinking. That's the sort of phrase that can really sort of promote in children a way of developing a real love of learning, or a love of stuff that isn't contingent on your praise, but is furthered by your praise.
I love that example. That's a great one to give, Philip, because you can hear the subtle differences in choice of words. It says, I am a joyous collaborator in your own achievement, as opposed to going, aren't you amazing? You're brilliant. You're, you know, far and above everybody else in the room, which I would suggest to you is a dangerous path when it comes to false perceptions of self.
Absolutely. You know, so my father grew up in Victoria as an AFL supporter. I grew up in Queensland and New South Wales, avid rugby league supporter. My father was always positive with me, but the way that he expressed that by was developing a love for the game with me. He would sit down and watch the game. He would spend hours, you know, kicking the football, passing the football to me. And what it felt like was that I had a not just a teammate, but a cheerleader. And I think that was, you know, such an amazing thing that my father gave me.
Di, can I ask you that part of this conversation around positive reinforcement for our children and how we choose to use our words, is that something that you've discussed with your sons and daughters?
Yeah, because sometimes, you know, when you've had a day where you've been frantically busy and they, you know, they either jump in the car or come through the door and start telling you about their day and you go, oh, that's cool, or that's okay, oh, good. I've had that reflected back to me by my grandson, actually, who seems to think that when you say, oh, that's great, but don't elaborate on it any further, he feels as though you're not listening. And he, you know, insightful young lad. So, yeah, I think it's really important to engage in that conversation of beyond it, that's cool, because that's a common line I use, so I will admit to that, and ask what's cool about it, I suppose, and maybe even reflect on some similarities. I mean, I align with the analogy that Philip has. My dad was a huge footy rugby league fan, and I was the girl that was born so late, and not the son, but we engaged together in, you know, being footy supporters, and that was a conversation that we would have long conversations about. And I see with my kids that they, you know, extend that conversation when the kids bring things home, where sometimes when you're tired you can just say, oh, that's good. And really you're telling them that I'm not particularly interested, but I've just, you know, responded to you. But yeah, the conversation needs to go further than that. And sometimes I know I have to make a concerted effort to do that.
Yeah, I think we all do. And so it's engagement as much as anything. That's the positive reinforcement. We've got to remember that. It's the engagement and actual, you know, meshing with what our children are trying to tell us about their day, which is part of that whole it's great to have you around kind of feel.
Yeah, it's I suppose it's identifying the fact that for them that you're actively listening. You're not just responding. You can definitely tell the difference with their response back to you when you do that. So if nothing else, I thank my kids for teaching me so much about being a parent, which is sad for them.
No, you're not alone in that, Di, believe me. I do understand. Look, we might have to wrap this up soon, but Professor Philip Parker, I might come back to you and the latest outcomes on this research. In terms of what's happening inside the brain, the neuroscience of positive affirmation, what can you measure there?
Look, that's beyond my level of expertise. I'm not sure I'm smart enough to know what's going on in the brain.
Oh, no, you're already smart. Good job, Philip. Good job.
Well, thank you. Yeah, great praise. Look, we do know from a fair bit of research that intrinsic motivation, so that is people that love the doing what they're doing rather than doing it from other reasons, that is something that gives rise to well-being in both a, you know, physiological sense and a biological sense. So anything that parents can do to cultivate that, their kids are going to flourish in so many different ways.
And is there any chance, because someone will be thinking this in their head, this is all very interesting. I am a parent. I'm dealing with this day to day in my children's lives. Is there a danger, and it sounds simplistic, of overpraising? Can you go too far with this and come up against issues?
I think as a parent, you can always err on the side of more praise. And right. The reason is that your children are not just getting feedback from you. In our modern schools, our kids are bombarded by feedback, not just from teachers, but from standardized, from fellow pupils, from everywhere. So we're pretty sure that the world will do a pretty good job of knocking your kid back down. And so there's probably going to be a little danger from being a cheerleader for your kid.
Okay, that's good to hear. And Di, as a grandparent and parent, any final thoughts for those of us who are still grappling with the dynamics of positive affirmation?
Well, I think to know that we are the greatest advocates for our young people. As the parent or the grandparent, we have the greatest investment in them. And I think kids are very astute. They can detect when you're not being real. I think the more positive you can be and the more engaged you can be, the better the outcomes will be for them.
It's been a great conversation. Thank you both very much indeed for taking the time here with us on Life Matters.
Thank you.
Thank you.